from the NBC Sports Grill and Brew at Universal Orlando Resort. Here's David Faraday.
Thank you. The great American Patrick Henry, sounds like an Irishman to me, once stood in front of the Virginia Convention and uttered the words, "I do not know what course other men will take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death." Stirring stuff. It sends a shiver through my liberty bells. Similar chills can be felt when watching the young man Jordan Spieth, dubbed Captain America, step on the tee at the Ryder Cup. Patrick Reed virtually took over the course in Chaska, Minnesota for 3 days. The American side rode the Texas gunslinger to their first victory in 8 years. For Reed, it was the mountaintop of his young career, and his legacy at the Ryder Cup will only be a part of his story once it's all said and done. Patrick, if you turned into one heck of a team guy, what is it about the team aspect that turns you into, like, the Tasmanian devil?
I think the main thing is, I want to see not only the team succeed, but I want to see the people that are behind the team, you know, get the fulfillment of, you know, having success. And during the Ryder Cups and, you know, in college golf and also during President's Cup, it's more on having all of our guys play well, because you can't do it individually. You have a whole team behind you and everyone needs to play well. And for that aspect, I feel like you always need to make sure you're helping every guy get better, not just yourself, because at the end of the day, you know, it takes everyone to come together and play as one in order to win. And, you know, for some reason, it just clicks for me, because it's so different in golf to actually have a team. Just kind of brings us back to the younger days.
Over at Glen Eagles, 3.5 points out of 4, and people really started to figure out that, Patrick Reed was a team player. They started to know your name.
You know, I didn't want to let down the players and the other guys who have been on the team, especially with how lopsided the Ryder Cup has been.
Yeah.
And then, you know, with how much I love our country, the worst thing that I felt like could happen was letting down my country, going over there, not playing well. So, we put in so much effort and time around playing well, making sure we're ready to go for the Ryder Cup. And I knew that going into hostile territory, they might cheer for great shots, they might not. It was kind of hard to tell, and I knew we'd get heckled, and my job was to go over there and try to quiet the crowds and try to silence them to allow it to happen.
In Scotland as well, so I mean, some of the crowd will be in a state of what we call advanced refreshment.
Yeah, it was an awesome experience. Captain threw out Jordan and myself out first. He said, "Guys, we need red on this board because we need to try to be able to come back, and the best way you can do is by getting red early, you know, getting that momentum on the team, and, you know, to shush the crowd." It just seemed to just elevate the entire day.
Having played so well that week, I mean, how disappointing was it for you that the team didn't win?
Anytime you lose, it's disappointing. But, it was such mixed feelings, because being your first, you want to go out and you want to validate that you deserve to be on this team by going and playing well. And to go out and win 3.5 out of 4 points, I was very excited that I played well, but at the end of the day, it felt so empty, because even if you play well and you don't bring home a cup, it doesn't mean really anything. So going into this year, that was one of our goals, was to not only continue the great play, but also to have, you know, help the team and figure out a way for the whole team to click and play well at that time, so, you know, we could keep the cup here in the States.
Well, I remember the first time that I was with you on the golf course. I was walking up the hill at the 10th hole in Greensboro, and you had Justine on the bag. And you beat Jordan Spieth in a playoff that week. That's quite a start to a career.
You know, we felt really comfortable going into Greensboro, and Justine and I, we had a great game plan going that week. And, you know, to get into the playoff, was awesome. And to finish it the way we did, I felt like was just... Was a dream come true, because whenever I hit the tee shot on 10 over there to the right, and the first thing they did immediately before the ball was down is the volunteer and spotter signaled as it was out of bounds. And my heart just sank. And so I hit a provisional. I get up there, my ball's in bounds by a mile. It's not even really close. You know, I looked at Justine, and Justine's like, "All right, well, look at that point right there." It's like, "That's right where the flag is." And the window was probably no bigger than that.
Mm-hmm.
She goes, "Well, Like, I hit a straight 7-iron. Been working on it all year and can't pull off the shot. I've been trying to do it all forever. And to go off and pull off a dead straight 7-iron right through the hole and to win my first golf tournament that way, especially with Justine on the bag, who was doing all the Mondays with us, and it just kind of all fell together to being just kind of one of those miracle stories. It just came true.
Those times with Justine in the bag, did that strengthen your relationship, you think?
Oh, for sure.
Because, I mean, it's easy to fall out with your caddy.
It is, but it speaks volumes for, you know, someone to basically give up their career and their dreams. And next thing you know, she comes to me when I have no status anywhere and says, yeah, I can carry your bag. I'm like, no, there's no, honey.
The bag's bigger than her.
I was like, there's no way you could carry this 40, 45-pound golf bag, you know, consistently. You know, she put her career aside and, you know, decided to travel with me and help me with my golf game. And it's been awesome. I wish she would come back and be on the bag sometime soon.
So 2014 at the Career Builders in the desert, you start with 363s. 27 under after three rounds. You said that you felt like you were putting in a coma.
Yeah.
Explain that to people that can't make a three-footer under pressure.
Yeah, really, it's just kind of one of those things that you're stepping up behind the ball and you have your putter in your hand. When you're behind it, the hole looks massive and everything at that point seems like it's just a tap-in, dead straight. You just kind of, you forget everything. You just kind of go through the motions and just the ball happens to find the hole every time you hit it. And
I'm not familiar with that feeling.
It was a great feeling, especially that week. And, you know, it's kind of one of those things that going back through those rounds, I left some shots out there each day. And it was one of those things that, I mean, that was probably the only times I couldn't go through my round and tell you exactly where I hit every ball, because it just seemed like it just kind of autopilot, just I was almost like I was in a movie. Everything was going where I wanted it to go, just plotting it away, and ended up walking off with, you know, 27 under par.
Well, a one-shot win over Bubba. You're 23 years old, the youngest winner of a World Golf Championship event, and that was the week of the famous quote. You know, all the heat that you took for that. How do you look back on that now?
You know, you have to have that confidence in yourself. If you ask every player out there, every single one of them believes that they're the best player in the world. If not, then they probably shouldn't be doing what they're doing. Because if you don't believe in yourself, then you're not going to get the best out of yourself. And, you know, it's just kind of one of those things that with the way I was playing going into the tournament and how I played at the event, you know, it's how I felt. And, you know, it's just one of those things. I thought it was, you know, it's always been a goal of mine to become, you know, one of the best players in the world. And I feel like in my short career so far, I'm heading in the right direction. I just need to keep working hard at it.
Yes or no? Apple, top five fruit or not?
No.
No. Tom Hanks, top five actor?
I'll say he's fifth.
Yeah, so yes?
Yeah.
You're a cook, you love the kitchen. Brisket, top five cut of meat?
Even in Texas, no.
No. Maserati, top five car?
No.
Frosted Flakes, top five cereal?
Ooh, I don't eat cereal.
Manti Te'o, top five Notre Dame player of all time?
I don't know if I would say top five, but probably I would say in top 10.
Okay. Manti Te'o's girlfriend, top five girlfriends of all time?
No, definitely not.
Okay. Patrick Reed, top five Ryder Cupper?
Top five Ryder Cupper?
Yeah.
Y'all are setting me up on this one. you know,
I think that's a natural
I would
yes.
I would say yes for the times that I've played, 2014, 2016.
Yeah, absolutely.
I would think, you know, later on down my career, we'll see where I stack up against the guys like Ian Poulter and those guys who have played 1,000.
Yeah. Faherty, top five TV show? You call that a yes or no?
I don't know.
Call that a maybe. So 2016, you get another shot at the Ryder Cup after a crushing defeat in 2014. How do you get yourself ready to play the way that you did?
I kept the game plan on, you know, preparing for an event just like I would every other event. And that just allows me to stay calm and kind of stay in the rhythm that I feel like I need to be able to perform my best. And once you go through those opening ceremonies and it's you're there and you're ready. It's a total different animal. It just keeps kind of gets my blood pumping, and those guys kind of just let me go.
Because your first one was in Europe, in Scotland. You know, in Chaska, Minnesota, there was a lot of red, white, and blue in the crowd. Does that get you pumped up?
Oh, for sure. You know, that was my first team event in the States. So this was the first time I actually got to play in front of the home crowd, wearing the red, white, and blue. And literally, I would show up to the golf course, and it was, you know, it was freezing in the mornings there. Mm-hmm. And my adrenaline was going so fast, and my heart rate was just beating so hard that I was hot. I was like, just get the sweater off. I mean, just, you know, and I'm in short sleeves again, and everyone's thinking I'm crazy. Two Ryder Cups in a row being short sleeves as everyone else is in beanies and freezing. And, you know, I was just ready to go. And I learned a lot this time from, you know, our captain and our vice captains and also my coach while I was there, that you can get really excited, but at the same time, you need to know how to handle it.
Of course, you get to play with Jordan for a couple of days there. You seem to inspire each other.
Yeah. You know, I think the biggest thing with Jordan and I being teammates is, you know, growing up playing golf with him, but at the same time, I'm trying to pull the best out of him, and he's trying to pull the best out of me. And the way we're doing it is we're out there trying to beat each other. If I go and I play really well and I beat him and he's trying to beat me, that's going to lead to more birdies, and that's going to lead to the other teams that aren't really going to be able to hang in there with us.
You're out first on Sunday with Rory McIlroy in a match that has become Ryder Cup legend. It's, you know, like watching two prize fighters. What do you remember most about that morning?
There's really three moments that I'll always cherish about that match. The first one was walking on that first tee. You know, being the first time playing at home, being his first singles match, and going up against a guy who is undefeated going into that match on his singles, just to hear all the USA chants and everyone just going nuts as I'm walking up to that tee. It was such an awesome feeling, and you know, I still get goosebumps talking about it because it's so cool to actually have that kind of atmosphere at golf. And then the second thing I remember is on number 8. He's setting up to hit this putt, and you know, he has a mile away over that ridge. And I look at Kessler, I go, "He's gonna make this putt." And Kessler's like, "No, he's not." It's like, "No, he's gonna make this putt." It's like, you always have to think that they're gonna make the putt. He goes, "I know, but I mean, okay, but he's not going to make this one. I mean, look how long." And I was like, "He's going to make this putt." And Kessler's like, "Oh, whatever. Okay, he's going to make the putt." You know? And then next thing you know, he hits it, and this ball's on its way. And when it's about 5 feet from the hole, he kind of just stares at me. And he just kind of looks at me, because we know at that point it's going in. It's dead middle of the heart, and it's perfect speed. With him going and just giving the "I can't hear you" and going crazy, and the, you know, you have a little bit of the crowd cheering. And then you have a little bit of the crowd just like, "What the heck just happened?" And to go and make the putt on top of him and hear everyone go crazy, and to go over, you know, as we're walking, he waited for me to get to him before we went to the tunnel. And to pat each other on the back, give fist bumps, and just, you know, talk and laugh the entire way going to the 9th tee, it just showed, you know, not only how great a golf that was being played, how much we all wanted to win, also the sportsmanship in the game.
Yeah.
And, you know, to have that, and then on the last hole to make the putt to win, you know, those three moments will definitely be moments that I won't ever forget.
You think that your Ryder Cup experiences have changed people's perception of you? You think they know Patrick Reed a little better now?
I hope so.
Yeah.
You know, I want to be known not only, you know, as a golfer, but also as, you know, the person that I am. And, no, I feel like the, you know, the Ryder Cups, the President's Cups, the Olympics, you know, has really shown, you know, how not only patriotic and how proud we are, but how passionate we are for the game, and, you know, that we are team players. And it's hard to see that because golf is such an individualized sport, but those events actually, I feel like, show, you know, the true colors of who people are.
You were a heck of a junior player. What was it that, when you came to pick a college, what was it that sort of stuck out about Georgia? That team had a ton of talent on it. Brian Harmon, Hudson Swafford, Russell Henley. Was there something about, you know, putting yourself up against, you know, guys that were very talented, you know, that appealed to you as well?
Of course. You know, anytime you can go to a college or a school or really any part of any team, you want to be on the best team because you want to go up against the best athletes. You know, I've always wanted to try to win a national championship, and, you know, I thought that was, at the time, going to be my best opportunity to go into a team like that because you need to know where you stack up against these guys.
Well, I think it would be safe to say that you got a little sideways at Georgia.
Yeah.
You know, with teammates, coaches. How do you remember that time?
I went to college for one reason. That was to play golf. And that was to, you know, that was kind of a path to get to professional golf. And that team that was there, they were all real close. They'd been there for a while. They all knew each other growing up. I didn't know any of the guys before. And so kind of coming in, you know, they always would hang out, always go to dinner and all that kind of stuff. But I would always kind of just go do my own thing because I was, you know, just kind of driven to go, you know, play golf, do your schoolwork, you know, and, you know, just kind of how it is in high school. And then
did you feel like you were maybe on the outside looking in?
Definitely when I first got there, for sure, because, you know, you have to get to know somebody and get to know the guys, and they already know each other. So they kind of, you know, and just trying to balance the schedules and all that and try to figure out, you know, how to kind of almost feel like you're pleasing everybody. It just didn't seem to work out. And it was overwhelming. There was way too many people. It was just way too large. I didn't know what to do.
There's a few of your former teammates at Augusta, you know, they piped up and there was a certain amount of whining as well. How much of that was deserved, do you think? And how much of it was the fact that you rubbed people the wrong way?
No, I honestly don't think any of it was really deserved. You know, the thing about me is, you know, I don't really sugarcoat really anything. No. I'm going to go and I'm going to tell people exactly how it is and how what I'm thinking, because that's the only way that you're going to be true to yourself. If you start going and, you know, trying to sugarcoat some things or say some things to people that might, you know, well, that might not quite hurt their feelings, so I'm going to say it this way. Well, the problem is it's hard to stay consistent because you're trying to cover something up. Rather than going out and just, you know, saying how it is, now all of a sudden you're not going to regret anything because you're being true to yourself. Right in the very beginning, I don't think they liked having someone come in and, you know,
kick their ass.
Yeah, and basically threaten, you know, threaten their starting position. And, because of that, you know, the very beginning of it was a little rocky, but it wasn't anything we all couldn't handle. And the good thing is we had a good coach who knew how to handle it and, you know, could, you know, coach a team together rather than just individuals. And I felt like because of that, it elevated not only my game, but also elevated the rest of the guys on the team. And, you know, once that first couple weeks or probably about a month was over, I felt like we all grew closer as a team.
Well, you know, the Ryder Cup's not the only place you got to show off American pride. In 2016, you finished just outside the top 10 in Rio. With other players pulling out, what was your decision? You know, you decided to play?
Any time that you can play for your country, it's we're going to make it happen. And we felt that it would have been doing a disservice to the game and also a disservice to us with, you know, with how proud we are to be Americans to not go and represent our country and go play.
Well, for all the bad press, you know, that surrounded the event, what was your time like there?
Oh, we had a blast. I felt really safe. I know Justine felt really safe as well. And the other golfers that were there on our team were really safe as well. You know, we felt like we could go to the mall, we could go out to eat. It was amazing. It was a lot of fun, and it felt great. It felt awesome. It felt how we thought it should have felt.
You think it's got a future in the Olympics? I know they're going to play 2020, but beyond that?
I think it does. You know, there's some things that probably can make it a little bit more entertaining, make it more of a team aspect type of format or something like that, but it definitely could stay in the Olympics, and I feel like it should.
Well, having played in one, does winning a gold medal at the Olympics, is it ranked kind of higher on your to-do list now?
Oh, for sure. You know, going into it, it was pretty high because growing up, watching the Olympics, every kid has always wanted a gold medal. And we never had the opportunity. You know, until this past year, there was no opportunity to win a gold medal in golf. And to have this opportunity now to be able to win one, especially when you don't know how long it's going to be in there, you know, it's one of the things that are high on the radar list.
Yeah, just as a side note, I picked you to win a gold medal at the Olympics, so I apologize. That is the kiss of death.
No worries. You know, maybe next time.
Yeah, but I won't pick you
all
next time. That way you'll have more of a chance. There's a story that when you were about 10 or 11, you started wearing long pants to the golf course because that's what the pros did. When did you start taking notice of what Tiger Woods did?
Probably that same time.
Yeah.
You know, 9 and 10 watching Tiger play through, you know, the 99, 2000, it was unbelievable. And, you know, I never forget growing up watching, you know, everyone at that time, kids growing up, they always wanted to be, you know, Tiger Woods. Because how successful, how he plays the game. And then, you know, everyone wanted to have, you know, Phil Mickelson's short game with the flop shots and, you know, go for broke on everything. So, you know, I tried to take, you know, growing up, take kind of both of those golf games, put them together and try to mold it into my own.
Well, one thing Tiger has that you haven't got yet is a major championship. What's the long-term plan?
I've learned a lot these past couple of majors I've played. You know, these past couple of years when I've been playing, I seem to always, I'm a tinkerer. I love to mess with equipment. I always seem to try to change something that's going to help me with the golf course, whether it's, oh, well, you know, this place is tight, so I need less bounce. This place, you know, this place I need a hybrid.
That's the Phil
side
of your game. Yeah.
And unfortunately, what it's done is kind of taken me off my game plan and, I'm not as comfortable with the equipment because I haven't used it for a long period of time. I think now it's just more on, all right, well, this is my equipment. This is what I'm using. Fine tune and, you know, get the aspects of your game exactly how you want them going into the event and feel comfortable with it. And then, you know, just going in and playing golf. I feel like I've put too much pressure on myself at Augusta multiple times on trying to go out and play great golf on my first major, you know, of the year rather than, hey, go in, play golf, do what you do, and that's play golf.
Well, you played just down the road at Augusta State. Is the Masters the one that you covet the most?
I wouldn't say the most. You know, I would love to win Augusta, of course. I'd love to win all four of them. But, you know, there's something about the British to me. To, you know, that claret jug, to go win the claret jug and to hit all the different kind of golf shots, have that creativity and, you know, play the game. I feel like it brings out every weakness in your golf game.
Early on in your career, the camera would catch you every now and then, just being pretty hard on yourself. Has that been part of the learning process as well, just maybe being your own best friend?
It has. I'm still really hard on myself. You know, I think that's because I'm a perfectionist. I have to do things at a high level all the time, and it just feels like when things aren't going quite the way, I'm searching, trying to figure out why not. I'm pushing too hard for perfection. The more that I just kind of, you know, let things kind of roll off. And once we had Windsor Wells and I have a little girl running around, it's kind of just put in perspective that golf isn't everything.
So what's next for Patrick Reed, for Team Reed? You know, they're so young, so much upside.
We just started our foundation and, you know, we just got that up and running. That's been a project that Justine, myself, and the team has been really working hard on because there's a lot of people and a lot of, you know, a lot of things in the community that we want to do in order to, you know, to help out.
How did you meet Justine?
I actually met Justine through her sister. Chris and I tried to date. We went on one date and it didn't work out. We figured out we were better as friends, and you know, that's then when I met Justine. And ever since I met Justine, we talked a lot, and you know, after a while of getting to know each other, you know, we felt like it was the right thing to do to you know, start dating. And I definitely think it's a dream come true to find somebody like Justine.
And not many players date their caddy and then
then
marry their
not at all.
So things are changing.
To find someone as, you know, passionate and, you know, competitive and just loving as a person as Justine, who will, you know, do anything for anybody, you know, you're really lucky. And, you know, I feel like because of that and because of meeting Justine, it is definitely made me a better person.
A couple of years ago, you were at the Players, and Justine is carrying Windsor Wells and getting towards the end of her term.
We're kind of bouncing back and forth whether we should go to Players or not and play. And when we decided we were going to go, we thought it might have just been Kessler and I going down, but Justine's like, no, I'll be fine. I'll, you know, so all of us went down. It was Justine, myself, and Kessler. And that just shows the kind of dedication she has to our career and also to golf, to, you know, to go that far into, you know, term, traveling and everything, and still being out there on the road. I mean, she was caddying 4 months. She was still caddying. The doctor had to tell her, you're done, stop. He's like, let someone else take over. And it was kind of a little scary moment at Players because, I mean, I'm helpless. I'm like, well, what do you want me to do? I can't do anything.
We're useless.
The doctor's all the way back in Houston.
We're useless when it comes to that.
So we got through the week, and it was a hectic week, but we got through it, and we were able to get home and have a little Windsor Wells.
Justine had a pretty serious health scare a few years ago in Naples.
So I'm laying in bed just kind of flipping through channels, and I hear just this thump. I'm like, you know, it sounded like it came from upstairs. But then all of a sudden, I hear, shh. Like, what the heck's that noise? And I walk in, and Justine is completely submerged underwater having a seizure. And, you know, I ripped her out of that bath, and, you know, she's not breathing. She's just, you know, going through a seizure. I'm flipping her around. I don't know what to do. I'm a mess at this point. And, you know, I call on the front desk because there's a phone in the bathroom just screaming bloody murder at the front desk. They don't even know. I mean, they're just, you know, they're going crazy. And the ambulance came. And, you know, luckily I was there because the doctor, when we got done, said, you know, she had about 15 seconds. If you didn't come in, if you came in 15 seconds later, there would have been, her lungs would have been completely filled. There would have been nothing we could have done. The hardest part was having to go call my mother-in-law.
Yeah.
You know, who I'm really close to, and tell her that, you know, Justine had a seizure. She was submerged in water. I need to fly you over here.
And, terrifying.
I won't forget when my mother-in-law got there, they sent me back to the room late one of those nights, late that night, to get some rest so I could actually sleep. And I got to the door. My hand was shaking so bad that when I opened the door, I started crying. I couldn't walk in. I had to actually go down to the front desk and have them come bring everything out of the room and take me to a new room. I could not go back in that room. That was the most terrifying moment of my life. I could have lost my best friend. I could have had my daughter not be able to see, you know, her mother for her whole life.
Well, I think, Team Reed, that you and Justine have done extraordinarily well, certainly from that first time that I staggered up the 10th hole in Greensboro. To me, you've done unbelievably well. Thanks for letting me be part of Team Reed.
Thanks, I appreciate
it. This afternoon,
it.
Man.
Yeah.
Dustin Johnson was 32 when he won his first major. Bubba Watson was 33. Jimmy Walker was 37. Phil Mickelson, 34. Patrick Reed doesn't have a major, but he hasn't reached his 30th birthday either. In fact, he won't sniff 30 until after the calendar turns to 2020. He's already mastered the art of capturing the moment, as we've seen evidence at two Ryder Cups. I'm no psychic, but I'm willing to bet that he may just do it before all of them did. Well, that's my show for this evening. You can hear more of this garbage at Fehertwit, Facebook, Instagram, and you can check out Feherty.com while you're at it. For all things me, I'll see you next time. Good night, sweetie.